In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I was talking to the listeners.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And hello to you too, Allison.
Hello, Scott.
How are you?
I'm good.
And how are y'all doing listening right now? Thank you for listening to us in your car, in your ears, on your workout, on your commute, to a J-O-B, wherever you're going. We're happy to be along with you. This week on the show, a whole bunch of new stuff for you. It's everything that's always been the same, that we've always done.
What?
Just stories that pique our interest. Nothing new. Just new stuff that you sent us, we found in our travels, in our unemployed world that we so happily live in. I'm going to start with Google Flights and what it does and helps me in my world. I travel a lot.
You do travel a lot.
By the way,
I just got home last night.
I did. From Mexico. Woo! And I've upped my travel game, by the way. This has nothing to do with the article, but I've upped it. I bought the Nintendo Switch. And I'm rocking on flights now. I'm playing Doom and Rayman Legends and stuff on the plane. So much so, I have the headphones on and the flight attendant scares me when she comes up and asks if I want something to drink because I'm so engulfed in the game. It's one step away from playing virtual reality on a plane. Then that's it. You got to just end it right there because that's too much. But I'm loving it. I'm digging it. If you guys have any games you like to play on it, let me know because I'm 12 and I like video games. And whatever passes the damn time on these flights is happy and healthy to me. And the flight was delayed when we were sitting on the plane. It was delayed and then we landed. Then we had to wait on the tarmac and I'm just
happy as can be.
Shooting monsters. I was happy. I was fine with it. So I like it. I've upped my game. So I bring a laptop, an iPad Pro, and a Switch. I have no room for clothes.
And your phone.
No clothing. I have no room for clothing
and
whatsoever.
A giant phone.
Yeah, a giant phone. I just wear the same jeans and I have two pairs of underwear in the suitcase and then all electronics.
Yeah, all chargers.
Yeah, so many cords. Oh, and now I have controllers and stands and things too. So it's pretty, yeah, I have no room. But it's carry-on baggage or nothing. That's the rule, right?
Absolutely.
I was talking to somebody at the event in Mexico and the airline had not, something went wrong at Pearson Airport in Toronto and all the luggage got screwed up. So most of the luggage didn't make it. And there was like, well, we have no clothes. I'm like,
Mexico was one of the times that I came to meet you maybe last year or a year before, and it was over a weekend, so I flew out separate from you and I met you there. And that was one of the times where my packing stood out so much to other people because the other people who were all there for the conference you were speaking at. And the conference was only 3 days. Like, this was not like a 3-week-long conference. And everyone had like two checked bags, like huge bags, and everyone was walking with them. And I was there for 2 nights. And I just had a backpack. I borrowed your backpack and I didn't have a purse or anything, just your backpack. And the person who picked me up at the airport asked me 3 times if I had forgotten my bag. I'm like, no, I'm good. It's hot here. Like, how much do I need? There's like 2 sundresses in there and a bathing suit, some flip-flops. Like, what else do I need?
Yeah, you don't need snowshoes.
The rest is chargers.
Yep, exactly. So Google Flights predicts delays before airlines. MediaPost.com brings us this. As Google has updated its travel search engine to predict flight delays using machine learning algorithms along with historical flight data, Google Flights will now predict some flight delays even before receiving information from airlines about them. The delays will be flagged when the search engine is 80% confident in the prediction, though not recommending a traveler delay getting to the airport.
That's what I was about to say.
Google Flights already shows delays, and now the reasons for the delays will be shown. A new feature is also added to Google Flights to identify the cheapest fare for any destination. Information on overhead bin space, seat selection ability, and baggage fees are out now, also included for American, United, and Delta. Delays and predictions of delays appear in search results. New fare types such as basic economy can sometimes limit options such as seat selection, booking, and now Google Flights will break those down as well. The age-old thing of figuring out delays, and that's what, since my life is spent on planes, I think I do about 130 flights a year or so, is finding out when, because if they're delayed or canceled, you want to be the first to know so you can go in and change it before everybody else does. And it's an art form, like TripIt. So I subscribe. One of the things, I was talking about subscriptions last show, was I subscribed to TripIt Pro, which tells you when delays are happening. Usually it beats the airline. Usually you get the information before. Like, I get this, and I look around, nobody knows yet. I just get up, or it's like a gate change. I know the gate change before it comes out on the airline's app or something. But this is also where the skill of an app, of an airline, comes into play to change a flight. And this is why I like, especially Delta, at the time where, and this comes into my preference of booking, because I've had a flight cancel before. I had a connecting flight, a gig in Phoenix. I had to get to Florida, and I was connecting in Atlanta after my talk. And I'm on the steps getting ready to go on stage. And right before I turned my phone off, it beeped and said, your flight's been delayed out of Phoenix, and you might miss your connection. Here is an alternative flight. Would you like it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Clicked yes, got on stage, did my talk, walked off, and had a rescheduled connecting flight versus got to go through this step, this hoop. So that was a huge...
Plus, everyone else is going to be rebooking too, so time is important.
Right. So
my concern would just be like, you know, making sure that somebody doesn't change. That's all.
I just used Google Flights for the first time last week. I usually use Kayak, right? And tells me where to go. And they use the Hacker Fares they can do, which is two different airlines to get somewhere, or one airline there, one airline back. I just used it for a pretty difficult spot to get to. I had to get from St. Louis to Calgary, like late one day and early the next day. So it was, I actually liked it. It wasn't too bad. So well played, Google. But don't use any of the information to plan when you're going to the airport.
Yeah, that's when you don't want to be like, because who do you hold responsible if they're wrong?
Google told me.
Sure they did, sir. Mm-hmm. So this, it just made me laugh. It says, this is from The Star, which is a Toronto newspaper. It says, KFC has chicken shortage in the UK. Yes, you read that right. No chicken at KFC. So the chicken crossed the road, just not to our restaurants. So said an announcement Saturday that tried to find humor in KFC's chicken shortage, which has prompted the fast food chain to temporarily close hundreds of its restaurants in the United Kingdom. KFC said the shortage was caused by a couple of teething problems with its new delivery partner, DHL. It's nice of them to throw the delivery partner under the bus. We know that this might have inconvenienced some of you over the last few days and disappoint you when you wanted your fried chicken fix. We're really sorry about that, KFC said Saturday. Shout out to our restaurant teams for working flat out to get us back up and running again. So it only affected the UK. It hasn't happened in the United States or in Canada. And it says as of Monday, about 300 KFCs, 900 locations in England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland were open, according to a list on KFC's website. Some restaurants are operating with a limited menu. I don't know how limited your menu has to be at KFC when you have no chicken.
Fries. We have fries.
Like, that's all really you could sell, right? Or biscuits?
Coleslaw and fries and biscuits. And pre-buttered buns.
It says the mishap came just months after KFC partnered with DHL as part of the fast food chain's ambition to revolutionize the food service distribution market in the UK. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think about this? Like, are they throwing them under the bus? Like, is it
KFC without chicken is just KF?
I thought they always changed it to the letters because it wasn't chicken anymore.
No, that was a good urban myth.
Right? You can't say chicken anymore
because it wasn't chicken. Because they were selling more than chicken. That was what it was. It still is considered chicken. It's poultry.
Food service is one of those industries that I have always been terrified of. Like, I never wanted to open any kind of business that had anything to do with food. Anything that, like, can make people sick or can expire or can, like, that terrifies me.
Yeah. Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, a huge amount of work and so much like trust based in someone coming in and eating your food and so much like I've been listening to a few different food based interviews on How I Built This, which is one of the podcasts we've talked about it a couple times, an NPR podcast that talked to like entrepreneurs and people who founded businesses. And the two of the most recent ones I listened to were Ben & Jerry's and Chipotle. And you know, I haven't gotten to the point in the interview, but I know it's coming because when they did the Chipotle, the introduction, the clip at the introduction is about the E. coli outbreak. And, you know, so I haven't listened to it yet. I'm like waiting to see what a horror that was, but it scares me. And I also think that the whole idea of the franchise, like this idea that you create this model and then send it out into the world and you want to like have the same food at every single location. Like, you know, if you go into a KFC anywhere in the world that it's going to be the same, that terrifies me.
Me too.
Like, can you imagine if we were held to that kind of standard? Like, that would be...
No.
Like, every single one of your talks, you had to do exactly the same, like, to the letter. Yeah. And we franchised you, and there were a bunch of little Scots walking around giving talks.
Oh, Lord, that sounds like a horror movie.
And they had to grow man buns.
It's like the secret... It's like the sequel to It.
And from our last episode, they had to...
Scott.
They had to be... There was, like, a looks code, and we had to figure it out. It's a lot of work.
You're tying in a lot of stories there. Well done. USA Today brings us this one, the USA Today and many other ones. Loyal L.L. Bean customer sues company for changing legendary returns policy. An Illinois man is suing L.L. Bean for breaking of its promises after the company announced changes to its warranty last week. Victor Bondi filed a lawsuit Monday in Chicago federal court against the outdoor retailer based in Freeport, Maine. Bondi, described as a loyal customer who purchased Bean boots, said the company's legendary warranty has always been the basis of the bargain for all of his purchases. L.L. Bean's removal of the warranty is a violation of the law and breach of warranty between L.L. Bean and the plaintiff and other class members, the suit states. Retailer's executive chairman said in a letter to customers last week, the warranty changes because some customers are abusing the policy, returning heavily worn products or products purchased at yard sales. The new limit new policy limits most returns to a year, which is a major change for the company who baked a lifetime refund policy into its DNA after 90 of the company's first 100 pairs of signature boots fell apart in 1912.
Oh my gosh.
So L.L. Bean's big thing has always been lifetime guarantee.
Since 1912.
And that was one of the things that separated them from other outdoor...
It's like Patagonia a little bit, right?
Right.
That was one of the things we talked about in Unbranding when we talked about Patagonia, was this idea that they would repair any age of sweater or whatever, and also that they, you know, even drove around the country repairing goods at college campuses and stuff.
So this warranty, it costs them tens of millions of dollars to do. And one of the problems with it was not original buyers of products returning them. What one of the problems was these days was people would buy them at garage sales. Here's the thing. They'd buy L.L. Bean products at garage sales, return them for store credit, buy new products with the store credit, and then sell those products on eBay.
Oh my gosh.
It's big business.
Really?
Yep. And that was a problem. And so problem is, and they say like 10 or 10% of these are, they think are, you know, done.
That's high. 10%.
In that way. Well, they say, yeah. And so, our friend, Jay Baer was on the news talking about this. He was being interviewed about this whole change of it. And he was saying it was great. He was just like, you know, REI did this a few years ago. They changed their policy to a year. And he says, if they just came out as a new store and said, we give you a year, it was one of the most generous return policies there are, right? Apple gives you a month. Right. Amazon gives you 30 days. So Apple gives you 14 days. Like all it was well over being generous with stuff. And he's like, the problem is, you know, their history is based on this. It's 100 years of 100 year guarantees. And that's a problem. And that's where, so how do you change that? What do you, because you can't even grandfather that in, because then it counts for 100 years of products and you're still not solving the problem. So it's interesting. And so one of the things is, well, is this enough of a differentiator that says, oh, now I don't need to shop there anymore because I can get those products somewhere else?
Or like, how much of the money they spent on warranty is actually marketing dollars?
Right.
Like, if they're known for this policy and it's costing them however many million dollars a year, if that's a huge piece of their marketing that they do that, and they stop doing it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, like, that could be, it could almost be seen as marketing dollars, mm-hmm. especially in the way we talk about marketing, right. Where your return policy is marketing. Like, how you treat your customers is marketing. So, you know, it's complicated. I mean, you have to question when people send up an entire shifty industry based on your return policy. Like, obviously,
no,
that's
no questions
terrible.
Asked return policy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You bring it in, we got it. It's our product, we'll take care of it.
So did they say in the article how the lawsuit was going, or they just said
just filed? Yeah. So it's almost like, how would you fix that? Would it be original owner, right? If the original receipt, that type of thing. But it was like, just bring in anything that has our brand and you're good.
I think receipt and ID is reasonable. If people are taking that much advantage of you, that's pretty shifty to go around shopping for used clothes, sell them, buy new, sell them. Like that's
here's
the four steps of wrong.
Is it a valid lawsuit? I think it is. I bought a product under a condition.
I know, but sometimes they'll say conditions and whatever may change or things like that, right? Lines.
I bought a product. It's like one of those things that changed. It was the yoga app. We talked about that like four or five months ago. Lifetime access to lessons and all this. And they changed it. Now we're going to go monthly subscription.
Yeah.
And you're not getting that access. It's like, you just changed the conditions of purchase after I purchased. You can't do that. So that's, very interesting. But the thing is, that was the big separator for them. That was the big part of you know, their unique selling proposition.
But that's what I mean by, right? It's a huge part of their marketing budget.
Huge. That's what made their name.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We'll have to check back in on it,
yeah.
right? And
we
see
will.
How it is. So this is about Amazon Prime. It says the Amazon Prime credit card will start giving 5% back on Whole Foods purchases. So we talked about this, that Amazon, you could now buy Whole Foods products, mm-hmm. right? They buy Whole
they
Foods.
They buy Whole Foods, yeah.
So the Amazon Prime credit card will start giving 5% back on Whole Foods purchases. And non-Prime members with the regular Amazon Rewards Visa card can earn 3% back. The Amazonification of Whole Foods continues. Starting on Tuesday, Whole Foods shoppers who pay with the Amazon Prime Rewards Visa card will earn 5% back on grocery chain in the U.S. stores. Amazon customers who aren't Prime members but who pay the regular Amazon Reward Visa Signature card will earn 3% back. Both cards already offer... Oh, so both cards already offer this on Amazon purchases, the 5% and the 3%. When Amazon purchased Whole Foods for $14 billion last year, it promised that the Prime Shopping and Entertainment Membership Program would become the loyalty program of Whole Foods, too. Earlier this month, it started delivering on that promise by offering free two-hour delivery from Whole Foods to Prime members in four cities. Why do not we live in one of these four cities?
But here it is. Here's the rollout happening. Here's where Prime becomes this...
crazy.
Mind-blowing thing, right?
The company is hoping the perks will get more Prime members shopping at Whole Foods and get existing customers to shop more frequently. Amazon also likely saves some money on credit card fees when Whole Foods customers pay with one of its branded cards than with another credit card. Amazon has made some other moves since the takeover. In August, Amazon cut prices on some Whole Foods bestsellers by as much as 43%. But by December, there were reports of some prices inching higher. The e-commerce giant has also started selling Amazon Echo devices inside Whole Foods stores. It also has faced some challenges. Whole Foods stores have faced food shortages that employees blame on the new inventory management system. I would like to move to one of these cities. I would like to have an Amazon Prime Rewards Visa card, and I would like my Whole Foods delivered in 2 hours because I support my new
Amazon leaders, overlords.
My Amazon overlords, right. And look forward to my broccoli and spinach.
And
I mean, that's part
of 20 pack of batteries.
Isn't that part of why they bought it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I love it. I just love the impact of Prime. The case study for Prime is its own. It's unprecedented. No, like Costco has membership fees, Sam Club have membership fees and how it works. But the way Prime has done it and the data they have behind it, it's just like it's the easiest no-brainer I've got renewing. And we're Prime members in two countries.
I can't get groceries delivered the same day.
No, no, you can't.
That's why when we're done recording the next episode, I'm going to the grocery store. If I could get Whole Foods here in 2 hours, I could stay home.
Mm-hmm. Good brisket right there. Good brisket. All right. We're going to the grocery store. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.